journalism has had a mission of holding people in power accountable for a long time in the U.S. But one group of researchers thought that the way politics has changed in the last few decades warranted some new approaches by newsrooms. In particular, they point out that democracies shifting to authoritarian rule used to happen abruptly and clearly, not so much anymore. So they're out with a new resource for journalists about covering threats to democracy, and we're taking a look at that right now. And we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the job news media has been doing when it comes to covering politics? When does it feel biased to you, and when is it just correcting false statements? What do you want to see in political news coverage that you're not seeing right now? More context, information, different perspectives? And have you changed where you get your news for one reason or another? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Jennifer Dresden is a policy advocate at the nonpartisan, nonprofit organization Protect Democracy. She previously served on the faculty and was associate director of the Democracy and Governance Program at Georgetown University. The new resource from Protect Democracy is called The Authoritarian Playbook, A Media Guide. Jen, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Dean. Thanks for having me.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the motivation behind creating this resource for journalists right now?
Absolutely. So, you know, as you said in the introduction, we typically think of the breakdown of democracy as coming in sort of a big headline grabbing event, you know, a military coup or something where it's very clear that democracy has declined and there is now an authoritarian system in place. But that's really sort of a dated model. That's not how it works around the world anymore. And instead, what we see is that authoritarianism happens step by step with a drip, drip, drip of small changes that in the aggregate, when you take a step back, you sort of wake up one day and say, oh my gosh, you know, what happened to our democracy? And for journalists, that's actually a really challenging process to cover. And one of the things we were getting questions from reporters and from journalists that basically said, you know, look, a lot of this stuff, it looks like normal political jockeying in a lot of ways. You know, politics is competitive. It's supposed to be in a democracy. And when people are competing, they're trying their best to get advantage, you know, within the system. But the things that are real threats to democracy are different in important ways. And so the motivation here was really just to provide a resource for journalists that was going to aggregate and summarize what the, you know, the experts say on this, the people who have spent their lives studying these processes around the world, to sort of distill it down into a resource that journalists could use to have a standard against which to measure these events in the world. So that's the motivation. That's where it came from.
Yeah. And in this media guide, you lay out the idea that journalists should be unbiased, but not necessarily neutral. Can you talk about what that means?
Absolutely. So being unbiased means not bringing personal filters or personal ideology to frame or shape the information that's being reported. And I think that that's something that's vital about the news media and how people get their information. But being unbiased does not mean refusing to draw any conclusions about what that information means, right? So being unbiased would have you present, you know, reliable, verifiable facts as they happen. But that doesn't mean that I have to say that this animal in front of me has four legs, is amphibious, moves by hopping, but that I can't call it a frog, right? Because there's a difference between a frog and a salamander. And if I refuse to say, well, this is a frog and that's a salamander, that's not being unbiased necessarily. You can call it a frog and be unbiased because according to the objective standard that we have, this is a frog and that is a salamander.
And we're living in a time now where I think a lot of us have maybe had some frustration about supposed facts, supposed reality being debated in the political sphere and becoming a political issue, whether that be election results, whether that be public health measures. Were those some of the concerns you were hearing from journalists who were asking you about this?
I think they certainly fall into the categories. You know, I think those are areas that are clearly of concern. But there is also a question here that we hear from journalists, not just about, you know, facts versus falsity, right? But also concerns about how to understand what is happening. And that, I think, is really the core of this report, is to offer a resource, even if you have, you know, facts that we all agree are the facts, how do we understand what they mean?
Sure. And then from reading your report, it sounds like context is really important, both historical and looking around the world at what's happening with authoritarian governments.
Context is absolutely vital. You know, I think because this process is such a piecemeal, step-by-step process, context really is crucial to understanding how concerned we ought to be. And I think one of the things that journalists do, and is absolutely a vital part of the role that they play in a democracy, is to provide that context to the general public.
We're talking with Jennifer Dresden right now with the nonprofit organization Protect Democracy about their new resource for journalists called the Authoritarian Playbook, a media guide about how to better cover threats to democracy. And Jen, in that guide, you lay out seven different ways that authoritarian governments can take hold in that slow drip style that you mentioned. I want to talk about a couple of those. One is politicization of independent institutions. This is something that might seem dry in a news story, maybe a little bit boring. You say these independent institutions are key when it comes to democracies and authoritarian governments. What are you seeing?
Yeah, so we're seeing this happening, or have seen this over the last number of years, happening across a number of different areas. And one of the examples where I would look at, where, as you say, it might seem dry, but it's really vital, is things like election administration. Right? We depend on elections to be run in an independent, nonpartisan, impartial way, right? That is absolutely essential to how any democracy functions. But Protect Democracy worked with partners at States United Democracy Center and Wisconsin's own Law Forward to track all of the bills being introduced around the country in state legislatures that would politicize or criminalize or interfere with election administration. And in the first part of this year, we found that there were over 200 bills being introduced around the country that would degrade the independence and the capacity of election administrations around the country. And this should be particularly concerning to your listeners, because what we found is that in the first part of this year, Wisconsin actually led the country in the number of bills of this type that were under consideration.
And so what advice would you have for journalists, say, in Wisconsin or another state, covering perhaps a local development on that topic and kind of putting it in context of a potential threat to a healthy democracy?
Absolutely. So I think for journalists that are covering these issues, there are four steps that we would recommend. The first is to look at a particular event or development, and in the context of those sort of seven issue areas that you mentioned that we lay out in the report, first ask the question, does this action or this event, does it fit within any of these seven areas? And if it does, to then move on to three other really vital questions that we think should inform how these things are covered. So first, is this thing that's happening in the context of other actions in the playbook? And if so, to what degree is it happening? Is this an isolated one-off event? Is it something that is a really intense example of whatever it is that's happening, whether it be the number of bills that are being introduced or other issue areas? Is it happening over and over? So how much is this happening and what is the context? And then the next question to ask is, how much does this deviate from precedent, right? Our democracy is not perfect, certainly. There are aspects of our democracy that have always needed improvement. But knowing whether this is something new and dangerous requires understanding what that historical context means. And then the fourth question to ask, and I think that this is really vital, is to look at whether this action presents a systemic risk to democracy. And what I mean by that is not just to look at whether there's sort of one bad actor or one loose cannon doing something that's problematic, but rather to look at the way that others in our political space are responding. Because if we see that institutions are facilitating or accelerating the problematic behavior, if we see that political parties are not constraining their members or things like that, that goes from one bad apple to a broader problem of our system. And that's when we really ought to be getting concerned, because that means that the sort of self-correction aspects of our system that we have, the checks and balances, that those are not functioning right. And that's when we really ought to be concerned.
I want to go to the phones now. We have Joseph with us in Green Bay. Hi, Joseph.
Hi. Yeah, so originally I was just calling to say, I think you had some question about whether or not you've changed news sources and what kind of news sources you use. I'm a pretty public news person, NPR, WPR, I am in Wisconsin, and then PBS, WPBS. But also I try to look just at general, every once in a while I'll Google, you know, as far as like news bias and look at the major, you know, typically I find like Politico and The Hill are kind of one center right, one center left, and I try to read things from there so that I get kind of a rounded way that people are spinning a certain issue one way or the other. Although since then, the conversation you guys have been having is pretty interesting. I feel like it's been a good 30, 40 years since some of those bad apples have started kind of infecting the rest of the apples in American democracy. And, you know, I think right now we're ranked like number 26th or 27th in the world as far as functioning democracies. This falsehood that we are the best country in the world and anywhere else your vote is nil. And it's been a long time since that's been the truth.
Joseph, thanks for the call. Jennifer, what do you think of what Joseph had to say about putting together a media diet and how the media as a whole is doing on covering this stuff?
Yeah, well, I think that looking at a range of credible sources is always a great idea. I think that more information for voters when they're looking, again, at credible sources is a great choice. Overall with this, you know, I think what we're seeing is that a lot of journalists are doing a really, just really tremendous work in covering these issues and in covering these challenges. I think that there's been a real acceleration in the rate at which reporters and editors are being very deliberate in how they think about these issues and how they think about some of the things we write about in the report. And so the report is not intended to suggest that there isn't good work being done here or that there isn't good coverage out there. There really is. But one of the things that I think is worth flagging is that for reporters, this is really challenging. Right? And they're working under very real constraints of deadlines and word counts, and you know, there's only so much they can do. And so the report is really intended to be a resource for them to help just make it a little bit easier for them to do the work that, you know, they really want to do well.
We're talking with Jennifer Dresden right now, policy advocate for the nonprofit Protect Democracy, looking at how journalists can be unbiased but not necessarily neutral in their work covering politics and a healthy democracy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see in your political coverage that you're not getting right now? Do you think journalists are not being neutral enough, or are they being too neutral? Do you want to see a little more teeth, a little more information, context in your news reporting? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kinetter. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Jennifer Dresden from the nonprofit group Protect Democracy about their new guide for journalists, an authoritarian playbook, a media guide. And Jennifer, we were talking about some of the aspects of authoritarianism that you lay out in that guide. They include things like quashing of dissent, corrupting of elections, stoking of violence, another, aggrandizing executive power. And with that last one in mind, I want to listen to a clip from 2019 of former President Donald Trump talking outside the White House about his use of acting cabinet members. Here's a listen.
Well, I'm in no hurry. I have acting, and my actings are doing really great. David is doing great at Interior. Mick Mulvaney is doing great as chief of staff. But I sort of like acting. Gives me more flexibility. Do you understand that? I like acting. So we have a few that are acting. We have a great, great cabinet.
That's former President Trump there with plenty of Marine One in the background talking about acting secretaries versus confirmed ones. What are you hearing in that clip, Jennifer?
So this is an example of where something that has a place and has a role in our democracy gets turned into something that is really problematic, right? We have laws that provide for a limited space for acting secretaries, acting appointees, as stopgaps when there is some reason that the constitutional requirement that the Senate advise and consent on these appointments be fulfilled, right? The Senate's not in session or there's some other situation, but it's a very limited space. And this is where context and precedent that I talked about before really matters. By September of 2020 alone, just that window in former President Trump's administration, there were 15 appointed officials who were in direct violation of the Federal Vacancies Reform Act, who are holding their positions contrary to some very clear law on this. And what that does is it denies one part of government, the Senate, its ability to hold another part of government, the executive, accountable for things like the people who are put in place. And those procedures are there to ensure that those checks and balances are there and that the president, for example, is not appointing officials who are loyal only to him or who are unqualified for their positions or who are likely to take actions that are contrary to the needs of our democracy. And so this is an example really that is quite clear, right? President Trump said in that quote, he liked the flexibility that appointed officials give him. Well, democracy is a system where no one person is supposed to have absolute flexibility. There are checks and balances. They're there for accountability. They're there for a reason. That's one of the fundamental principles of democracy.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Peter with us in Ashland. Hi, Peter.
Hello. There's a book that covers some of this stuff about that's related to Nazi Germany, but the interesting thing is it's a Milwaukee woman who at UW met a German, married him, moved to Germany in 1928, and they were opposed to the Nazis taking over and did everything they could. But that book really covers how Hitler very legally took over the government. And there's so many, as you're reading it, there's so many parallels to right now, it's scary.
Gotcha. Peter, thanks for the call. Peter, I think maybe referring to Mildred Harnack there. Jennifer, obviously, 1930s Germany, a comparison we always have to be careful with. But you also point out more recent, current examples of countries taking the slide into authoritarianism that you think journalists can keep in mind.
Absolutely. You know, we definitely always want to be careful about the comparisons that we draw. Again, one of our big points in the playbook is that context is vital. But I do think that there are a number of countries around the world that we can point to. You know, look, the United States is not unique in the challenges that we are facing. For the last 15 years, democracy around the world has been in recession. Essentially, countries all over the world have been facing these challenges. And I think that for any particular instance of what we see in the United States, there are parallels overseas. So if you look at some of the expansion of executive power and the sort of dismantling of checks and balances that you see in a place like Hungary, for example, that would be one area where we see similar dynamics at play. But, you know, what we do in the report is for each element of the playbook, we look both to examples of what we see in the United States, but also elsewhere around the world. And it's not limited to one geographic region or one area. We can see parallels in Hungary, as I said, or in India, or in the Philippines. This is really a global problem that we are seeing our own American version of at home.
I think a lot of newsrooms over the past number of years have probably seen the polls showing public opinion in the press is going down. A lot of people think media is too biased. And so sometimes pointing out, stances or positions by politicians as a threat to democracy might be a little scary. What would you say to an editor, a newsroom who is worried about potentially scaring off readers by taking a little bit more of a stronger stance?
Right. So this is an area where I think what we try to do in the playbook is offer some concrete tips to journalists and to editors about how to cover these things in ways that are concrete, that are rooted in the facts, that again, leave very little room for the introduction of bias there. So when we talk about, for example, we talked about politicizing independent institutions, right? There are ways of covering these issues that rely on experts who really can explain the history of a particular institution, or experts in election administration who can explain why it's so important that election administrators be independent, or why it's so important that law enforcement be independent of partisan politics. And so what we try to do in the report is offer concrete tips for journalists and editors to do this in a way that is grounded and that sort of, again, leaves very little room for individual bias, but makes choices about how stories are covered that, again, calls a frog a frog.
Well, Jennifer, that's all the time we have today, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Jennifer Drusden is a policy advocate at the nonprofit group Protect Democracy. We talked with her today about the guide her group put together to help journalists identify and report on threats to democracy. More to come here on Central Time. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.